So nice to see you all. Welcome. It's a sunny old day here in the UK, which I have to say has been, for those of us here, what is going on with this weather? Like, it feels like this winter has just been long, 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 protracted, awful, wet. Yeah, not cool. So it's really nice to see the sun, and it makes me feel like hopeful. I don't know about you. I'm really impacted by the weather. So this kind of dank grayness can make itself be gone, and we'll welcome in some spring sun. It's really nice to see you all. Welcome to our call. We're going to get started with just getting here in our usual way. So I just want to invite you to put your feet on the floor. If you want to close your eyes, you're very welcome to. It's not recording your faces, just mine. So you can pick your nose quite happily. No one will know. And just kind of draw your attention to your feet on the floor. Just know that you're connected to the earth. And bring your attention up your body into your legs and thighs, your bum on your seat. Just notice that you're held. You can soften your belly, relax your sitting bones, that pelvic bowl area where we hold a lot. Just encourage your hips to open and relax and come up your back into your shoulders. Just invite them to soften. And come up to your neck. You may want to give it a little stretch. Move from side to side. Invite your jaw to soften. No one needs to smile here. Just take a breath. Just whatever's here, let it be here. Notice whatever kind of day you've had so far. That's your life. That's life. And it's going to have its beautiful, profound moments of wonder and connection. And it's going to have its laundry. Just let that be here. And come down your front, over your head, down your face. Just soften into that. How we all see you. Your very unique, one-off, gorgeous faces. And come down the front and into your heart. And just thank yourself for taking this time to be here for you. Trust that you'll get what you need. You can ask for what you want. There's space here for you. And come down into your belly. You may even want to put your hands on your belly. This place that we have lots of information and feelings about. And this is the core of you. This is your hara. It's where all your stuff gets processed. And just come down the front, back into your feet. Give your toes a little wiggle. And when you're ready, just come into the room. Open your eyes. Hey, everyone. Can be really, really grounding to do that for yourself in the mornings, or whenever you feel a little bit like, oh, lots of stuff is going around me. It's a really lovely grounding technique just to do that process of up the back of your body and down the front. It takes, usually if you kind of do it on your own, it can take around a minute. And it can be a great way of just bringing yourself back to yourself when you need to. It's that sacred pause between stimulus and response. One of the things we talked about in our last session was this idea of a gratitude practice. Of just noticing the things that even in some chaos or some unwanted stuff that you can recognize, like, oh, I'm glad I have that. I appreciate that. This feels good to me. This reflects who I am, reflects my values, reflects who I'm becoming. And I just wanted to check in and see if anyone just experimented with that and how you found it, whether it, some, because sometimes we can have some resistance to that. It's like, no, I just want to wallow, right? And sometimes it can feel a little kind of clunky and a bit like, oh God, is this high vibes only? All of that stuff can be there. But I wonder if anyone did just maybe play with that and what you found. Feel free to share.
I found it easier. Oh, sorry. Jumping in. The first few days, I had like quite a long list. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like a reluctance to put the same thing on twice. So I'm like, I can only be grateful for like longer days once, right? And then I'm done. So that was interesting. And I also noticed it was much better at it the days that I was generally feeling more optimistic anyway. Like when I was really tired. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? It's sort of harder, but then that's when you need it more.
Yeah. I think that's such a brilliant observation, right? That when we need it more, it often feels harder. And I think that's, in some ways, it's why doing it on the days where you are feeling a little more optimistic and you are a bit, maybe just better rested and things are kind of in a bit more flow, getting into the habit of it can be really supportive, because then you're like, okay, well, what's my list from yesterday? What's still here? Still having longer days, right? I'm going to count that for the entire summer season. I've got one thing, right? Like just allowing yourself to make it easy for yourself, right? I know when I first came across a gratitude practice, like, and properly did it, like didn't just kind of hear about it on Oprah. That was a thing that I really struggled with, Kate, was, yeah, am I allowed to put the same thing more than once? And the other thing I did was try and be really inventive. Like, I was working quite hard for my gratitude. and I think, you know, allowing this to be easy, it's like that thing of how we do one thing is how we do everything. Sometimes that can be true, right? I can work really hard for the things that I appreciate, that like that is a kind of pattern for me. So it's like, oh, interesting that it would show up here too. Yeah, really cool. Thanks, Kate. Esther, did you want to share as well?
Yeah, it's just really quick. I've been really struggling with the lack of light and blue sky. Yeah. And so I've been really looking out for colour, mm-hmm. new leaves, and just spring colours, really trying to soak it up in the absence of light.
Yeah. And how have you found just even putting your attention on that?
I find it just a useful thing anyway, just to, I find that when I'm out, because I live in a city, I find it really very busy and loud. And so being able to just look at stuff gives some respite. So I think that's been, helpful. Changing the channel a bit.
Absolutely. You know, I used to work in a building in the middle of London's financial district, and we moved into a building that had been redesigned, and one of the things that they did, they were trying to be a bit more mindful, and I don't know, to distract us from the horror of daily work, I don't know, but one of the things they did was they had TV screens right through all the floors, and they would put stuff up, you know, it was just like announcements and things, but in between that it had a screensaver of like fields and nature and flowers and color and the beach and all of those things. And the reason for that was that there is good research that even when we look at a picture of nature, it can have not quite the same benefits, but many benefits. So even if in the depths of winter, your screensaver, for example, is a colourful spring scene, it can actually boost your mood a little. So I love that you're just looking for the green. It's like, yeah, I'll just take what I can get. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Love it. Yeah, Lorna.
I found that grounding thing really moving this morning, in tears. But outside my studio, when we moved in to where we live now, there was nothing. So I created a bed that I could plant plants, so I could see them directly out of my window. And I planted a silver birch. So my son gets home just after 4:30. So that's the time I come out of my studio. And it was kind of, it was just as the light levels were changing. So February time, just that slight, it's not pitch black, it's getting dark. So I've been trying to take a photo. I've set my alarm on my phone, 4:30. So just to get out, so that's the time I lock my studio. So that's the time I need to be, that's my role, you know, they're changing my role. So I've been taking a picture of my silver birch every day. Well, not every day. I've given myself some gentle kind of, it doesn't matter if it's not every day, but most days. And just to focus on that, the change in the light, the change in the plants. And I've really enjoyed it, and it stayed dormant past everything else was starting to sprout. And I noticed the silver birch took it sprouts later, their leaves start later. But then I kind of kept looking at it. So I'd take my picture, but then I'd look at the kind of, and they started to bulge a little bit, and they, do you know, there were changes. And the light was changing, but, you know, to look at it, it looked the same. I thought, what am I doing? I'm taking a picture every day and there's no change. And then suddenly the leaves have started to come. So, yeah, that's been quite a nice focus for me.
I love that so much. And just the metaphors, right, that are available to us when we start looking at nature in that way. All that stuff of, you know, nothing's changing, it's always the same, and underneath the surface, you know, actually quite a lot is going on. Yeah, love it so much. Oh, silver birches are beautiful trees as well.
People laughing at me, you know, and my alarm's gone off. It's so funny. We're at the cinema on a rainy day with both boys, and my 16-year-old just elbowed me. So what? Why is you're meant to be taking a picture of a tree, you ridiculous woman.
It's up a tree alarm.
Yeah. What else would you have? I was even at parents' evening and it went off. So.
Exactly. Oh, I love it so much. Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. So good. I love how as soon as we start getting appreciative for nature, right, it's like you can't, I don't know if that's just me, it's almost like you can't help but then look at, and how what is the message of this? What's this telling me about what else is going on in my life? When I really look at this tree, what is actually available to me? You know, because I can almost feel you willing it into springtime, Lorna, like willing it forward, and how we can actually do that for ourselves too. You know, that's a really beautiful aspect of self-belief. You know, I'm gonna believe that there is something emerging in me. Something is coming. The next version of me is coming. And you're reminding me of this beautiful quote from Ram Dass, who was he started off being a psychotherapist and then he took a lot of LSD and kind of got enlightened. But he compared, he talked about how we often compare people and we say someone is this or that or the other, and we do that for ourselves. But we don't do that with trees. With trees, we just say, oh, that one grew a little gnarly, or look at how that one's growing around that thing and how, you know, innovative the tree is. And as soon as we start looking at people as if they were trees, that you start to see that you just don't need to do that to other people. But actually it's so much easier to hold trees with that kind of acceptance and reverence that they just are. So I love that you've brought that in to us too. Yeah. And Mary, yeah, the new me emerging on nature's timeline. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that will just take as long as it takes. Yeah, beautiful. I'm with you on the process of appreciating what's good. And I'm just finding that in and amidst a lot of kind of changes and chaos and difference, that it's just bringing me back to what really matters, which is lush. It's a really good feeling. So I highly encourage taking that with you. I love this, Fiona. When we lived in the city, we try and visit a botanic garden or a park every month or two to see the changes. Yeah, it's a quiet retreating space. Yes. Yeah, and especially when you're living in a city and those urban places where, you know, it can feel a bit like nature is quite hard to come by, then yes, I highly, highly recommend. Any kind of green space is a good thing to be appreciative of. Groovy. It's nice to see you, Fiona. Cool. Okay, has anyone got questions, things that are coming up, stuff they want to chat about? What's happening? Feel free to share. Esther, we're all secretly hoping you'll share.
So I got on the course.
Of course you did.
Yeah, I was I had the sort of enrollment call and it was a bit more intense than I anticipated, yeah. Which was a bit of a shock to my system, but it was really good. It was really good, and I hadn't over-prepared. And I just came off feeling really buzzy, in a sort of good way, and also I don't know, I think my system was quite activated by it as well. It was the whole thing is inviting me into a larger space, so that's taking a bit of integration.
Yeah, yeah.
but it feels really good.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to take it slowly.
Yeah. And I mean, congratulations. That's so, such wonderful news. And it's unsurprising for all of us, right? Because we're all like, oh my God, they would be so lucky to have you.
Oh.
Speaking on behalf of the group here. I'm curious to know, Esther, if you noticed, and you may not have, but did you notice if your self-talk, like the way you were sort of talking to yourself before, during, after, did you notice that felt different or in some way maybe healthier? Like, I'm just curious to notice what made it good, you know, for you.
I think I sort of touched on this last time a little bit, that I'd got to a place where I just thought, I'm just going to do this and I'm going to try. And if it doesn't happen, then I'll find some other route.
Yeah.
And so I think it's within my sort of character to prepare for all the different outcomes, basically. So I think the level of self-support was there, which I haven't had for a really long time. The sort of the safety net, if you like, if it didn't go so well. And so that's definitely changed. I think the caring for myself afterwards has been a bigger task, I think, because it's been a real... it's a big commitment doing this, and it's closer to what I want, and so it just feels like there's a lot at stake, and I'm in this sort of self-doubt zone.
Yeah, it makes so much sense, doesn't it? When you think about like the loop, right? You've taken this action and now the risk is like high.
Yeah. There's sort of no more hiding. I think that's the, that's where I've got to.
Yeah. So that's an interesting observation, I think, isn't it? When you think about making this decision about what's next for you in your career, that what can happen is we get distracted with all the choices. And it feels like where you've got to is actually, no, I can make the choice, but then I can't hide anymore. So that's actually where the risk is.
Yeah.
And it can mask itself as too many choices and don't know and all of that jazz.
Mm.
Yeah. Waiting to feel ready, you know?
Yeah. Been in that zone for a long time.
Yeah. And now it feels like you're emerging out of it.
Yeah.
Right? Something more useful, more meaningful rather than useful, that is that's available now.
Yeah, for sure. It feels bold.
Yeah. And is bold a word you would use to describe yourself?
I'd like to be able to use that to describe myself.
Yeah. So, because I just want you to notice that there is a part of you that's bold.
Mm.
Might be a little part, right? That might be the emerging germination. But remember, Lorna's silver birch tree started as a tiny sapling, right? And now it's all over the place. It's got its own tree alarm. So we start with these seeds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this part of you that's done a bold thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a part of you that's bold.
Mm-hmm.
You can call on that part when you might need to make more bold choices. Doesn't have to be the whole of you. Doesn't have to overwhelm you, but it's like, oh, but I have that resource in me that I can call on. And I know it's there because I've already done something that's bold.
a nice thought.
that's how it works. So and I guess, you know, for those watching, like even when we have these, we make these small moves, right? The small move is to investigate the course, and then we do the next thing. Oh, I'm gonna do the interview. I'm gonna see what happens. You know, then you get accepted, and it's like, well, I'm doing the course, and then it's gonna start, and all of this. So your boldness isn't required to be fully formed right at the start. It's just enough to take the next thing. And what happens is when you take that step, and you kind of like meet your boldness, because you don't realize how bold it is until you then you find yourself, you're like, shit, I'm doing it, you know? Then what happens is your boldness is growing alongside you. So the next step doesn't feel as overwhelming because you already have this quality emerging in you, right? So it's growing alongside you. And in a year or two, when you complete the course and you want to use this as perhaps a business or a way of offering services to people, then, you know, your boldness will be so much greater than it is now. And that will feel like something you probably want to do more of, wherever you end up taking it. Who knows?
Yes, that's a really lovely way to think about it, as something that is developing over time, because I think some of the fear comes from feeling like you ought to be the what you envisage yourself being at the end of it right now, and it's a good reminder to be thinking, actually, no, that's something that just emerges over time,
because you're not there yet.
No.
So it comes back to, like, you know, these concepts of self-acceptance. I'm just going to accept where I am right now is making a few bold moves and shitting my pants. Right, that's me now. I'm good with that, right? And I'm trusting that it will be okay because I can just make that next step. I think this is what you're speaking to is really important, because there is this kind of myth out there in the world that you've got to feel ready before you can take the first step. But the bit where we get a bit kind of messed up, I think, is we think we've got to feel ready at how we should feel at the end of the thing, when we've crossed over the canyon, right? And you're just at the start looking down going, well, that's too steep. It's too far. I don't want to. So we can't ever know who we're going to be at the end of the thing. You never have to feel as confident as you would at the other side when you're starting out. You just have to feel brave enough to take the first step. And the thing about feeling brave is that it always feels shit, right? Because you're doing something that requires some boldness. It requires some courage. And that's only necessary because it's something that's stretching us.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I just am so just so jazzed about where this will take you. It's bloody brilliant. Bloody brilliant.
Thank you.
You're so, so welcome, Esther. It's really cool. We're excited to be on it with you. Yeah. Hey, I'd love to talk more about this that comment that you've left. This is very cool.
Yeah. So cool. I don't know how specific to be, because I'm like, oh, it's a thing that I guess I fear judgment about.
Okay.
And I also, yeah, like maybe once my partner comes back, I'm like, maybe this is not a conversation I want them to overhear. But so yeah, like me and my husband, we've been married for 8 years, and for most of that time we've not been monogamous. We've dated other people, or rather, like, they've dated other people and I haven't. And so part of, like, what I wanted to explore through this was, like, going on some dates, maybe dating some women, and I thought it was my self-doubt holding me back. And And especially because sort of, especially since moving to London and mainly like sort of hanging out within the queer community, like a lot of people are monogamous and it's sort of a more thing. But what I found, even when I've met people I've really liked, is that I just like don't want to. Like, I think it's really sacred to just want to sleep with one person for the rest of my life. And it's like surprising me how like conservative, or that's the judgment, right? I feel about it all. And like, actually, like, this isn't a thing what I want. Maybe what I want is just to, and it's like a reversal, because for years I've just thought, oh, like if I was more confident, I'd pursue other relationships. I'd have lots of partners, like we'd all hang out together. And I don't think that's what I want, but I'm like, is this just my self-doubt being sneaky and being like, no, just like do the more conventional thing? Or do I actually just want to do the more conventional thing because like that is true to my values in a way that I'm not judging anyone else I know who kind of, yeah. So that's what I'm wrestling with at the moment. And I also feel a bit bad because like I have met some people who really like me and like want to continue to see me in a romantic sense. And I've started like every time you get a message being like, I don't want to hang out with this person, but I would if we were just friends. So I'm like, is that my gut, or is that like, is that my healthy adult self saying, no, you don't want to pursue alternative kind of romantic relationships? Or is that my healthy adult self? And I've just like tied myself in a bit of a, like one day I think I've decided, no, I'm going to do this. And I guess, yeah, I mean, I know that I'm erring into like black and white thinking and I don't need to like decide I'm this way forever, delete all dating accounts, go back to this. I could just like take each relationship as it comes, but yeah, it all feels a bit confusing at the moment.
What does your healthy adult self say about all of this?
I suppose when I've like thought about it, sort of gone back and thinking about some of the exercises and like the beliefs, is that like I, as a teenager, felt very attractive. Like nobody, it's, you know, I was quite like a late starter when it came to kind of having relationships. And I also sort of didn't realize I was bisexual till quite late in life, you know, like in my 20s, because of internalized homophobia and all of that. So I guess part of my healthy adult self thinks I'm just trying to like course correct. And I'm still trying to, I think that, yeah, getting people to sort of be attracted to me is like validating in a way that isn't really truly validating. It's like my younger self being like, oh, if I could get people to, yeah, like want to date me, want to sleep with me, then that's good. But actually, like, why? You know, why if I'm happy without that? So I think that's what my healthy adult self is saying, that it's all a bit juvenile.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? Because what I'm just hearing, and tell me where I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is that it's actually you judging this more conventional, let's call it that, this more conventional choice. Like, it doesn't sound like it's something you want to do, but you're kind of judging yourself for that.
I think that's it. I think, like, in theory, I understand, like, relationship anarchy and, like, it's important to my feminism, right, that we shouldn't like tell everyone that like one person owns you, even though that's not what monogamy is at all, right? But like there's something in my mind, as you say, that's just like judging what part of me believes is a more conventional choice, and that I'm still trying to fit in with the cool kids, even though maybe I just don't want to do that.
So I guess notice, right, like that your values are very much about relationship freedom, right? Yeah. Romantic freedom, rebelliousness against some of the status quo. And can you hold the complexity that you could believe all those things and still, so can you imagine the complexity of holding all of those really progressive and inclusive and beautifully like freeing beliefs for everyone else and you,
and
still choose?
Right, because it's about choice, isn't it?
Like it feels very aligned. It's just that your choice isn't perhaps quite as
Yeah, I think
rebellious as it could be.
And I think I've sort of fallen into this trap that thinking that the like you have to be like going out and doing the big unconventional thing for it to be what you really want. And actually sometimes you just like don't want to do the thing, you know, whatever that thing is, right?
Yes.
That, you know, maybe when you, yeah, you, before you started doing this work of really like listening to your healthy adult self.
Yeah.
Bike. Yeah.
And notice, right, that the belief is the thing that matters. What you believe is what you create.
Yeah.
Right. So you are, by believing all of these, the relationship freedom in its most expanded state, that's your belief. And that means that you hold that for all the people that are around you, for the queer community you're part of, for your partner. I mean, how much compassion that takes to offer that to your partner, to hold that for you so true.
I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of therapy work on that. But now that I'm here and I'm comfortable, you know, like it's not that I get jealous. It's just that it feels kind of wrong in my gut.
Right.
For me, you know.
For you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so notice, right, those two things can coexist.
Yeah.
What's right for me might not be right for everyone else. And that's the very value that you're holding for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm wondering if what you're seeing as an inconsistency is actually quite consistent, quite coherent.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And that feels good. And I think, because I'm just being like a martyr about it and a people pleasing about it, because like if I go on a date with someone and I decide actually I'm not sure I want this relationship, but they do. Yeah. I just like go on another date with them and then feel yucky. And it's like, that's not really fair on them either, is it? But yeah.
Because that's where I wonder whether there is some conflict internally, right? Is that actually that kind of stuff, it's like, oh, it doesn't feel like I'm being transparent and honest and open and all of those good things.
Yeah. And where, I just like don't want to be flaky and be that person, really. I listened to a podcast the other day where one of the people was like moaning about married women who like start dating like women who are married to men who start dating women and are just like, I'm just seeing what it's, or dipping my toe in, and how that just like is really offensive to people who are like, well, I want to know what you want before I like, and I was like, oh no, I did that, I think. And they've just been a bit unethical about it.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, you can only learn as you do things and reflect on your behavior and be honest with people, I think, as things change.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And so it would be interesting to maybe experiment with, what if I just bring a real, you know, honesty into all of my connections?
Yeah.
And see if that actually shifts that kind of disquiet feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's what it's attached to.
Yeah. I think it's attached to that. And also then not wanting to hurt people. But I sort of, my healthy adult self is a bit like, well, you're probably hurting people more by like stringing them along when you're thinking of this stuff. Like, it wouldn't actually offend me if somebody said to me, you know, actually, I'd rather just be friends. In fact, like, you've gained a friend, right? So
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we never quite know what the universe has in store, right?
Right.
So it's that thing, isn't it, of being true to yourself and what's true for you right now and opening your heart to whatever could happen in the future.
Yeah.
And I just want to offer, like, there is no last day that no someone isn't going to find us attractive and want to sleep with us.
Yeah.
And I know this to be true because I've spent quite a bit of time with my mother-in-law, who is 83 and in a care home that had a gonorrhea outbreak not that long ago. And this is quite conservative, middle-class New Zealand, right?
And I mean, the other thing is just like, it's possible as well for somebody to, like, I think like this scarcity mindset that is like completely me when I was 18 thinks that if somebody wants to be, you know, like if somebody wants my attention, I have to give it to them. because like otherwise, but it's like obviously not going to end up alone anyway. Like I'm in a really supportive relationship that I'm using as my base to explore that, and yet there is some like younger part of me that is just like, I can't turn people down. That's yeah. awful.
And that's yeah. that's the interesting, but I think that's the bit to explore, yeah. right? Is the where am I kind of, you? Because I think your self-doubt is involved, but not in the way that maybe we were
thinking at the beginning. Yeah.
yeah, that actually it's this tendency to want to take care of others to the detriment of yourself.
Yeah.
Can you bring some honesty and some boundaries into that and, mm-hmm. and play with it, see what happens?
Yeah.
All of my friends who are, you know, and I have a part of the queer community and, you know, have really close friends who are in this, and it's like, yes. man, the conversations about boundaries and communication,
yeah. when
we all disappear up our own asses talking about this stuff. Like, it's so key, right? Because these relationship dynamics are just more complex. So, you know, part of this, I think, is just about, you know, playing with what feels true to you now.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I think you put off in a call a few weeks ago because I brought up something about my parents and you said, is that what you're reading about attachment? It's not, this is, but like it's all linked, right? Because learning yeah. to set boundaries
totally.
In this context is helping with family stuff as well. It's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you say, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
And I don't know anyone who is who has explored polyamory or been, you know, interested in more than, you know, one kind of ethical monogamy,
yeah.
or non-monogamy rather. There isn't a person I know who is engaged in that who hasn't looked at their own attachment styles and gone, wait, hang on a freaking
minute. Yeah, yeah. Right? And that's why I'm grateful for it, actually, as hard as it's been over, you know, my journey and with my husband having girlfriends and things, is that,
yeah.
like, yeah, there's sort of self-development and the opportunity to look at things I wouldn't have otherwise looked at has been great, but yeah.
The opportunity to really explore what unconditional love is enormous.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. And thanks for that message in the chat.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Beautiful. So fun. And I have several friends who they joke about getting t-shirts made, LOL, late onset lesbianism. It's totally a thing, right?
Yeah.
Someone who's like very clearly like, this is me. I would say, you know, be true to what's true for you now and keep an open heart because, man, 2020 did a number on some folks. yeah, really cool. Love's love. It's all good. Yeah. Beautiful. Anyone else want to share anything that's coming up for them? Yeah, Sheena. A writer in residence.
So I've been trying to build up the courage for weeks to be able to talk on this call. Like, I don't know, it feels a bit more scary than the previous one. For some reason, I don't know. But yeah, I wanted to talk about my writing, if that's all right. Because, I don't know, I think in a lot of ways, it kind of... I don't know, it's like a metaphor for everything else that I do and struggle with, kind of. So when we were on the thing before, I was working on something with a really specific girl. I was trying to write a draft of this story and then had a competition that I was going to apply for. And as I got, whereas the first bit of the girl and the writing and the ideas and the just committing to it and doing it was all great, when it got close to the deadline, I was a million miles away. Like, I just couldn't do it. And I had to go, you can't do it. Like, I've failed at that task, you know, whatever. Like, I had to do it. And I was really disappointed for a while. And then I've kind of pulled myself out of it and gone, well, let's set a new goal and try and find another thing to submit to and just try and finish the thing. And so that's where I am. But like, it's so hard. I'm every single time I'm writing, it's like I'm so overwhelmed by all of the different things that it could be and ways that it could go. And I finish my writing session for one day and then I'm like, fine, it's going this way. And then the next day I'm like, that's a stupid idea, like it can't go that way, it's got to go that way. So then I'm backtracking and I'm just not getting anywhere. I'm going one step forward, two steps back. I still don't have a draft and I feel like it's so hard. Why can't it be easy? Why can't I just do it? And but then I'm also a little bit like, oh, but hang on, this is familiar, because this bit, the ideas bit, the first bit of everything is great. But then this bit where I'm having to like slog through all of this stuff and it's rubbish and it's and I'm I hate it and I want to try again is normally the bit where I give up and maybe go, I can't do this. I'm 100% giving it up and, you know, crying and, you know, just really distraught about a project or a thing. And then I'll have months of not doing anything and then I'll start another thing. This sounds really dramatic, but do you know what I mean? Like, and then, but for this time I'm still doing it and it is, and it's just really interesting to kind of be in this really difficult, I just don't feel like I'm ever going to finish it, but I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
So I kind of just wanted to say that and share that, and I don't know.
Do you want to finish it?
Yeah, more than anything.
Do you want to finish it even if it's not the best thing you've ever written?
Yeah.
So what is stopping you from finishing it?
Well, I suppose that it's just not, what I'm writing just isn't good enough.
Can you write a reasonably okay story? What if it isn't good enough? What if the last line is, and then she woke up and it was all a dream? Right? Like, because I wonder if part of this, and this is very, you're so right. I mean, this is, lots of us are good at starting things and then we hit some hurdles and we're like, oh, well, clearly I'm not meant to do that, right?
Hmm.
Where you're at, which is this sense of fortitude, right? I'm going to do this, even though I'm not doing it. I'm going to do it. Like this, I can feel the tussle within you. I wonder, like this idea, it's not good enough.
Hmm.
What does good mean when it comes to art?
Yeah.
Like, and this idea of the competition is interesting, isn't it? Because to win a competition, we have to be better than everyone else, is the logic. And it's a lot of pressure to put on yourself. Right? And maybe it's your 12th short story that gets highly recommended in 2 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
But to get there, you have to finish this one, mm-hmm. Right? And it doesn't have to be good, it just has to be done. I wonder if you're kind of nodding along, and I'm wondering if this is resonating.
Yeah. With you. Definitely.
So I wonder if you can see this story as an invitation to let go of this need to be really good. Because mm-hmm. that's your critic, right? Yeah. Who's writing the story.
Yeah. Yeah, who is just like every single time I'm sitting down to write, shouting at me, like, what you're writing is, no one will ever want to read this, it's terrible, it's da 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 da, give up.
No wonder it's hard to write with that nonsense going on.
Mm-hmm.
yeah and so that might not go away to start with, right? But you can say, okay, that's enough now. You can like speak out loud to that critical voice and and come back to the ideas. Like, take one idea that you've had, the one that, you know, the critics have gone all, you know, worried about, oh, it's not going to be good enough and you shouldn't do that. Take it to its natural conclusion. I know a couple of writers who have written three different endings to the same book. Mm-hmm. You may end up doing that. You could take a couple of ideas, but the idea is finish it. Even if you end up writing the same story three or four times. You're writing. You're a writer, so you write, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea that it has to be good so you can say it's complete and then it's submitted to a competition and then it's deemed the best, that's nothing to do with the writing process.
Mm.
So your critic really wants to do that because it believes if you win a competition, then you'll know you're good enough.
Mm.
Right? And you don't have to wait for that, because it may or may not ever happen. It may be, like I said, your 12th short story in 2 years' time and it gets highly commended, right? So what will that mean?
Mm.
Right? But you can decide right now, okay, well, it's my story. I've been given this inspiration from wherever that comes from. So the question of, is it good enough, is the wrong question.
Mm.
Right? Is this a story I can complete, that I can write, because that is what I do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, you know, the mess of it all, and I'm just, you know, paying attention to Lorna's comment here about that mess of being in the middle of it when it's all over the place and you're not sure what it even is yet. That's part of it too.
Mm.
And this, you come back to this every time you write a new thing. So it's like, rather than say, oh, it's got too hard, I must stop. Mm. It's, oh, we're in that phase. Okay, I have to write my way through this.
Mm.
I have to choose and then keep going and get to a natural conclusion. Even if the natural conclusion is she woke up and it was all a dream. And you go, well, that's a cheesy ending. I've got to write a better one. Right? At what point in the story do I go back and go, okay, now this is where it goes.
Mm.
You won't even run out of ideas.
Mm.
Keep going. Mm.
I think maybe I've always thought that when it's hard, it's wrong in a way. Like, you can't do this because it's too hard for you.
Right.
It's just a thing I think that I've got running through quite a lot of stuff that I do. It's like, oh, well, you can't do this because it's too hard.
Is that true?
Well, no, I don't think it is. But it's hard to change. Well, a belief, isn't it? It's a belief.
And I wonder, like, what's another way of thinking about this? Instead of, it's hard, so I should stop. What's just a more helpful belief?
I don't know.
Can I offer one?
Mm. Yes, please.
Could it be something like, this is hard to write and I'll keep writing? Or so I'll keep writing.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Right, it's like, it gets easier the more you do it, right? It's like anything.
Mm.
Right. This bit's hard and I trust that it will untangle, or it will get easier.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find a way through. These are just more helpful beliefs. And it sounds like you can believe those, right? They don't feel like crazy stuff you're plucking out of the air to make yourself feel better. It's like, oh no, that's the bit, right? I worked with a writing coach last year who said the process of writing is finding the words putting the words in the right order. Like that is, and that's hard, right? And that is the process of writing. We think, right, we have this romantic idea that it's, you know, sitting in a beautiful room surrounded by books and there's a fire and a cat and a chair and you're tapping away and it's flowing and it's like the characters are talking to you.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes I think you get into a flow and it does feel a little bit like that. But to get there, it's like we have to create the conditions in our brain for that to be possible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's like kind of okay if it's hard.
Thank you.
But what I would say, Sheena, is that right now your critic is your editor, and you haven't even finished it yet.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, not yet. It's not your job. Don't worry about it. I've got this.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep going. And that belief, this is hard, so I'll keep writing through it. It's kind of the only way.
Mm.
And it means that, you know, your characters and your plots and where this is going, it's like, oh, and all I have to do to get through this, to write through this, is choose a direction.
Mm.
Take it to its natural conclusion. Because I can always come back and edit it. But my goodness, isn't it easier to edit a full page of words than a blank page?
Yeah.
How's that feel, Sheena?
That feels good, thank you.
I will wait for years to read this damn story. You can take as long as you need. I'm still waiting for it. But yeah, like keep going. There kind of isn't any other way, unfortunately, you know? And I wonder as well, what something that you may want to do, which is using the theme of the self-belief audio that where you go 3 years in the future and you kind of imagine what life's like. What you could do is go, imagine yourself having written the end at the end of the story and really bring that moment to life for yourself. Like you could just journal on that. Like, where are you? How do you feel? What has happened to enable you to be able to write the end? Like allow it, don't worry about the time frame, but just get to that place in your being so that you can recognize it. Right? Like literally what sensations are available to you to write those words. You know, knowing that you're happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you bring that alive for yourself and you enable yourself to then kind of walk towards that vision rather than this current vision, which is just all the voices saying what's wrong. And it can feel a little bit like you're kind of in a cage with that. Whereas it's a bit more freeing sometimes, I think, to allow yourself to imagine where it is that you're actually going.
Great, thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks, Sheena. Who else is like, man, I so want Sheena to write that story? Yeah, totally. Totally, we're all holding it for you, love. Like, and it's not a pressure thing, right? It's just we're all standing there going, you take your time, we're here. Yeah, so good, so good. All right, loves, we are at time. Thanks so much for being here today. What a glorious, like, shimmy around different topics and ideas and conversations. And yeah, it's a joy to spend Wednesday mornings hanging out with you. So, yeah. Take care of yourselves. Practice some gratitude. Set a tree alarm. I think that's a beautiful idea. And and I'll see you all next week. Yeah. Okay. Bye, loves.